There is no object in the house quite like the toilet. Other furnitures and fixtures may have multiple uses, but there are just the two main ones for the toilet. It's a relief for most of us, pardon the pun. We do our business, flush, and it's no longer our problem to deal with. Well, we wish it were that simple. It's not. Not with billions of people on the planet, many of whom do not have access to good sanitation. Chelsea Wald takes up the topic in her book Pipe Dreams, The Urgent Global Quest to Transform the Toilet. Chelsea Wald is a science journalist assigned to write about sanitation infrastructure in 2013. Since then, she tells us she has repeatedly plunged into the topic of toilets, her term. Chelsea lives in the Netherlands and joins us from The Hague, Den Haag. Chelsea Wald, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much for having me here to talk about toilets.
It is a pleasure. It's an interesting read. And, Sam Keen, I noticed, wrote your blurb. He's been a guest several times, and he warns us not to poo-poo the toilet, his term. Do we tend to ignore? I mean, is it one of those things we'd really rather not talk about?
It is a technology that's known as a sort of flush and forget technology, and people like the forget part. I mean, even if you think about how many times you used the toilet today, you might find it difficult to remember, whereas you would certainly remember how many cups of coffee you had. Well, maybe that's not the best example, but, you know, other things that you do during the day. But it is a taboo subject, and we've just learned to hide the toilet from even from our own thoughts.
Yeah, you know, you're probably right about that, because we can always remember how many meals we had and stuff, but we can't remember necessarily how many times, at least I can't, we went to the bathroom. It's not one of those things you want to keep front of mind. You start the book at an odd toilet in Alaska above the tundra. What did that encounter in 2010 trigger in you?
Yeah, well, as I went to write this book, when I started to do research on toilets, I suppose, I didn't know I was going to start to do a book. It made me start thinking about toilets from my past that I had remembered. So maybe these toilets didn't make me want to write about toilets at first, but when I looked back on them, I started sort of putting the pieces together about the importance of toilets in our lives and in our planet. And one of the toilets that was really memorable, I got the chance to go to Alaska to a remote research station in the Arctic Circle called Tulik Field Station. And there's about 100 scientists there at a time. And they have funny toilets. They have to do their business into these big tanks that are above ground. They haven't dug them into holes. And it's very flat. The tundra is very flat, and there's nothing on it because it's the Arctic Circle, no trees. And these are just sort of the highest buildings around. And every time you have to go, you have to walk up the stairs to an outhouse on top of these tanks and then go into the tanks. And it's sort of just a hole into them, just like you were, you know, using an outhouse at a cabin or something in the woods. And then you walk down, so everyone can always see who's going to the bathroom at any time. And the reason they do it this way is because this is a very pristine landscape with limited nutrients. And that's really important in terms of how the landscape works, the ecology of the landscape works. And so if you were to put all of this pee and poop into the ground, it would change the landscape entirely. And that's because our pee and poo have nutrients in them. And that nutrients, depending on what you do with them, they can be pollution or nutrients can be fertilizer. So it really, they sort of are the same thing. So fertilizer in the wrong place is pollution. So that's why they have to collect all of it. And then a truck comes and takes it away into a place with a treatment plant. So that came to mind as I was writing this book, and I thought, oh, what a great way to explain, to visualize what our pee and poo is with respect to our planet.
Well, it is that. I mean, it's an extreme example, as you point out, because of the landscape and the fact that you can't put the stuff down there like we do in a lot of other places. But that makes us realize that the stuff has to go somewhere, and that's a major issue in the world right now.
Yeah, it has to go somewhere. I think, you know, it is you know, biodegradable, I suppose, right? So everyone, you know, you might think, oh, it just gets broken down and goes somewhere, you know, it goes away. It goes away. But that's not really what happens. So, but on most of the planet, you know, there's a lot of people who don't have access to any treatment for their waste at all. So about more than half of the population on our planet, you know, several billion people, don't have what's known, what experts call safely managed sanitation. And that is a sort of expert term for it doesn't get treated. So it might end up, it ends up in the environment one way or the other. So it could be that people don't have toilets at all. That is the case for you know, quite a lot of people. But even more people have just very poor toilets. So I think about 2 billion people have just very poor, inadequate toilets. Or they might have pit latrines that then, when the latrines fill up, that there's nowhere for that waste to go. So there's no treatment if someone comes and empties it. There's nowhere for that waste to go, no treatment plant for what's called fecal sludge. And then in some cases, people might have toilets that even feed into a sewer system, but there's no working treatment plant at the end of that sewer system. So that's really a lot of people unserved by safe sanitation. And I have to say that quite a lot of people in the U.S. even, unfortunately, still don't have access to complete plumbing. So no water and no safe toilets.
And a situation not entirely apart from what goes on in the tundra when you start talking about the Black Belt of Alabama. We can get into that in the next segment of the show as we're heading to a break right now. But places where there really is not a lot of ability for the soil to take in the things that the human waste systems put out. So it's not just in other parts of the world. It's also right here in the United States. Chelsea Wald writes about this and more in her book, Pipe Dreams, The Urgent Global Quest to Transform the Toilet. It's kind of a scary situation, but an upbeat way of looking at it. We'll get back to talking to Chelsea, and you can join us with your emails when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 15. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Our guest is the journalist Chelsea Wald, who's been covering science and other topics for a long time now, but really, in her words, plunged into the issue of toilets a few years ago and realized how many people in the world, billions, don't have access to either a good toilet on one end or an adequate sanitation system on the other end, or both. And so that is the subject matter of the book, Pipe Dreams, The Urgent Global Quest to Transform the Toilet. It's a conversation you're welcome to join on the Jefferson Exchange. We can't take phone calls today because of shorthandedness, but we can take your emails at jx@jeffnet.org. So let's pick that up. But let's talk about the issues within the continental United States in Alabama, in the Black Belt of Alabama. I just read the New Yorker piece about this, about how bad the soil is there, and there's just no place for stuff to go.
Yeah. Catherine Coleman Flowers' book, Waste, covers this pretty extensively. It's a good read as well. It's a very poor area where Black communities have been left out of sanitation advancements. People who have septic tanks find that their septic tanks fail in these soils because the soils, the clay soils, can't absorb the liquids very well that come out of the septic tanks, and then people can't afford the expensive septic tanks that are required for that soil. They can't afford maintenance on the septic tanks, and people unfortunately have to. What's called straight pipe in some cases, the waste from their homes just into the woods. This is something that you see all over the world, and people, you know, in Alabama don't prefer this, but they're stuck in a very difficult cycle of poverty, and this causes disease as well, and this is a really good example of how toilets are failing people all over America and all over the world, and something we don't really think about that much. But the new technologies might be able to help in that situation and in other situations if we put our minds to innovating.
So let's talk about some of the innovations, because you tell us about a place in the Netherlands where you now live called, is it Waterschoon?
Yeah, Waterschoon is the name of the project, and the town, the city is Sneek.
S-N-E-E-K, right? I have to spell things like that, yeah.
Yeah, it's spelled S-N-E-E-K, but it's pronounced Sneek. And I just want to say that what I am seeing, what I am reporting on, is that I don't think that there is one answer to this problem. I think the problem is that we have one toilet, but what we need is many toilets. And so what I saw in Sneek, for example, is just one example of an innovation. What they're using up there are vacuum toilets. So you might know vacuum toilets from airplanes, mm-hmm. Or boats in some cases, but these are sort of a fancy vacuum toilet that they use, and they put them in people's homes, and vacuum toilets suck out the waste, and so you don't have to use a lot of water. There's only just a little water in there, and it's almost not necessary. It's almost just sort of a security blanket, because people like to see some water in there. And it goes to a treatment plant on the site of this 200 unit housing complex, and there at this treatment center, it's a pilot, it was a demonstration project. They use what's called anaerobic digestion instead of aerobic digestion, which is used in most conventional treatment plants, to create biogas, which is used back in that housing development. They pull out phosphorus from the waste, which is a fertilizer, and they pull heat out of the waste water, the gray water that comes out of the houses, and also that combines with the black water, which is the toilet waste, and they pull heat out, and then they use that also back in the complex. So it takes all these resources out and uses them right there on site. And you could even use the water on site, although they haven't gotten that far with that demonstration project. But this is a good example. I mean, when you think about the sort of euphemisms for pee and poop, you know, you might tend to call them human waste, but I think that's a misnomer, because they are resources.
Well, that's interesting, because you mentioned that we think of the toilet as a trash can, but it holds the potential to be a recycling bin, you write.
Yeah, so there's many ways that the resources can be used, but I think, you know, it's sort of a mental block. We do think of it as human waste, and so we use the toilet, and we think of the toilet as a trash can, but there's a lot of opportunity there to reclaim the resources in it, and people are doing really interesting stuff in that regard. For example, there are several projects. I saw these maggots, the larvae of an insect called the black soldier fly. They'll eat poop, and then they are a protein source that can be used back in agriculture. And this is actually being done in Kenya right now. So there's a project that collects poop from people, and it's separated from urine, brings it to a processing center, combines it with other kinds of organic waste, like food waste and agricultural waste, and then feeds it to these larvae and creates a pretty valuable product out of it. You can also make cooking fuel, like charcoal and other kinds of fuel. And people are working on other things, components for bioplastics, for higher resource settings where you can have high-tech processes in place. So there's really a lot of opportunity there that scientists are working on right now.
Is one of the issues, now we haven't talked about the flaws in the current toilet. I mean, it uses a fair amount of fresh water, less over time, but the fact that this is water that could go for other purposes, including for humans to consume, and yet here we are flushing it away a couple of gallons at a time, that's one thing. But also, do we need to be separating things out? Should the pee and the poop go to different places?
It can, and it can be really helpful to do that. I particularly think that this is a really good idea. But in Snake, they don't do it. They put everything into this vacuum toilet, and it can all be processed together. So as I said, there's no really one right answer, and I'm not advocating for one particular solution. But I do think that's true. And it's important to remember that the toilet, at sewers, and even our the treatment processes at the end of the sewers are technologies that are more than 100 years old, even though the treatment process is about 100 years old. And they were designed in a really different time, in a time when they weren't thinking about resource scarcity, water scarcity, you know, the scarcity of certain kinds of fertilizers, for example, phosphorus, which could run out, and all of, you know, all of these other issues that we face today, climate change. So it's an opportunity to sort of revisit the technology and create a lot of different advancements and move away from the single idea of a gold standard and create a lot of different gold standards.
So there's a lot of different thinking. People have to think about toilets, though. And one thing, before we close the book on Snake completely, or close the lid, I guess, I wanted to ask about, because a lot of people came to look at Waterschone, but they don't adopt the system. What do they find lacking?
Yeah, I mean, this is really interesting to me because this is one of the hard things about writing this book, which is you have all of these technologies. They seem really great, but they are at the pilot phase or a demonstration phase. And there's a lot of reasons for this, but one of the things is that I think is that, and that experts have said to me, is that people don't want to be early adopters of new toilet systems. People just want a regular toilet. So if you have an exciting, like, you know, you might be willing to get a new kind of computer or a new kind of Fitbit or something like that. But if someone said, hey, install this, you know, toilet in your home, you have to learn how to use it and it'll do these cool things. Most people go, no, thanks. I'll just take the normal thing. They don't want their toilet to be like a conversation starter. And I think that's part of it. There's also the industry is pretty conservative for good reasons. You know, they want to make sure things work really well and are going to be really reliable before they install them. I mean, plumbers know how to service, you know, a certain kind of toilet. So you'd have to train a bunch of people. So there's a lot of things standing in the way. And some of these systems, you know, they really need more testing. And so you need more people who are willing to install them at larger and larger scales to show that they work.
Chelsea Wald is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is called Pipe Dreams, The Urgent Global Quest to Transform the Toilet, because we have billions of people who don't have access to proper sanitation, either on the sending end or on the receiving end or both. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. We can't take phone calls today, but we can take your emails at jx@jeffnet.org. And Anne in Grants Pass wrote in to ask about, how about composting toilets? Our toilets that use water are such water wasters. Composting toilets use the waste as humanure, and you use that term in the book too, I noticed, Chelsea, to nourish plants. Why aren't they used more? That again from Anne in Grants Pass.
Yeah, that's a really good question. If I can take a detour and talk about the project in Haiti that I went to visit,
sure,
which is a compost toilet project, and then I'll get back to that, why they aren't used more. But in Haiti, I went to the second largest city called Cap-Haitien, and there's an exciting program there called Soil, which has been running for like more than a decade now. People in Cap-Haitien in Haiti, in the poor parts cities, don't have sewers. I mean, they don't have sewers really anywhere. And they tend to use pit latrines, or they might not have a toilet at all. And those pit latrines can be not very private. They don't have good doors. And they can be in bad condition. And as they fill up, they have a problem because emptying them, they have to hire people, you know, stigmatized workers to empty them, who then don't really take them to a treatment plant because there are no treatment plants. So the situation is pretty dire. What Soil provides are containers in a kind of form that's the shape of a toilet, and people use that. These are basically compost toilets. They cover it up with a sort of with an organic material after they use it, and then workers will come on a regular basis and collect them and drive these containers to a center for composting.
A couple places of the world, as you point out, where people do manually carry away the poop and pee of other people.
Yeah, and this is actually a really old idea. In fact, before in England, they decided to build sewers everywhere, you know, in the Victorian period, and also in the U.S. I mean, people were doing these night soil programs. So this is a sort of return to an old idea that people had discarded. Reverend Henry Moule was a Victorian advocate of the earth closet, but he lost. He lost the debate. And that's why water carriage took over. But there is the opportunity for these kinds of toilets to really make the difference in a lot of people's lives. I do think that there is also one thing I really like about that kind of program is that you have professionals coming to collect the containers and doing the work of handling the poop. And so it's done safely, it's done professionally. People can do it on their properties, depending on local regulations, I suppose. But I think most people aren't going to want to do it themselves. I think that's, if you want to do it, you can buy the Humanure handbook and do it. But I think that that's not something that's going to get to a very large scale. It's something that could be done on a community level for sure. I think urine collection is something that could be more viable. If you can separate your urine, you could even use your normal toilet, but you separate your urine by peeing into a separate container, or you can use a urine diverting toilet. You collect the urine, which has most of the nutrients and almost none of the pathogens. It's safe to handle. You can age it yourself and use it on your garden, or there can be a community program that takes it, pasteurizes it, ages it, and distributes it to farmers for use or to gardeners. So I think that's something that we could see. And then those nutrients don't end up in the system, so then they don't make it to the treatment plant, and the treatment plant doesn't have to deal with them and take them out of the water before it gets discharged, usually into a water body.
We have actually a couple of emails for you because people got excited about the subject, I guess. Gary in O-Town Given says, pee in a bucket of water and use it on your compost or under trees and bushes. So thanks for that, Gary. That's something you've heard about before, it sounds like.
That sounds good. The ancient Roman writer Columella, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, suggested watering pomegranate trees with urine. So that sounds like an ancient practice to me.
And Randy, No-Town Given, wrote in, I have a composting toilet, in quotes, on my sailboat, and I was pretty apprehensive about it at first, but it works great. He wrote butt with two T's. It works great with pretty much zero odor. It separates urine and poo and can last a couple of users for about 2 weeks. So it's interesting that there are certainly small-scale composting toilets that are out there at about in somewhat regular use.
Yeah, there are. That is true. And I noticed that every once in a while, like every so often, there's an article saying composting toilets are on the rise. But it never seems to take off. I mean, I'd like to see it happen, but I just have doubts about the scale that it could get to. But there are certain conditions, like on boats, and also in informal settlements and in very poor cities and in agricultural areas, and there's just a lot of places where that could work pretty well, and I encourage it.
And then Gordon in Medford writes in to remind us about Arcata Marsh, within our listening area in Arcata, California, the local wetlands are. He says it is the city's wastewater treatment facility. I've been there; it's part of the city's wastewater treatment facility. There is some real treatment going on. Wants to know if such systems can effectively deal with pathogens. I imagine you've seen things like what they're doing in Arcata.
is Arcata the wetlands that has a lot of birds and so forth?
Yeah, near Eureka. Mm-hmm.
I think it can successfully deal with pathogens. I can't speak to it too much. I think I've read about it, but I'm not. I'm sorry, I can't say much more about it unless you. Mm-hmm.
I can't add a lot of details myself. Yeah. So just one question to put on the table before we get to a break, I find myself wondering if we can find places for the excreta of potentially 8 billion, maybe 9 billion people.
Find places for, you mean?
Yeah. Is there enough? Yeah. Can we make use of all the stuff that humans put out?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I mean, we're trying to solve the problem of sanitation here, but it can really help. I mean, there's really not a lack of a need for energy and cooking fuel and fertilizer. So I don't have any doubts about that.
Okay, we'll pick up the conversation on the other side of a break. The book is called Pipe Dreams, The Urgent Global Quest to Transform the Toilet. It's by Chelsea Wald, our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange. You can join the rest of the conversation by email jx@jeffnet.org. We are back on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 20. It's the final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We are talking about toilets here on the program, and you're more than welcome to join us. Chelsea Wald is a science journalist, been writing about lots of different science issues over the years. In 2013, was assigned to write about sanitation infrastructure, and, well, as she points out, she has taken the plunge ever since into the topic of toilets. That resulted in a book called Pipe Dreams, just out this week. Pipe Dreams, The Urgent Global Quest to Transform the Toilet. It's a conversation you are welcome to join. We can take your emails, but not your phone calls. That's jx@jeffnet.org. So, Chelsea, just in a real general question here, I mean, how much do squeamishness and cultural taboos impede progress on creating a new toilet, new toilets, as you say, plural?
Some people think that it's quite a lot. I've lost my squeamishness over the past few years, so it's hard for me to reconnect to that. But there was a time I remember when I wouldn't have a conversation about toilets at all. I mean, I actually remember a friend wanting to talk to me about the differences in toilets in Germany. I live in Europe and the U.S. and Germany, they have this shelf. And I would just was like, I am not talking about that. And so some people think, indeed, that squeamishness is a limitation on innovation in this area. I tend to think that that is the case, and that also a limitation is this issue that toilets have, flush toilets have become synonymous with sort of civilization, and people think they're pretty great, mm-hmm. And they are. They've really made our lives much healthier. But there's this paradox that they could be a lot better.
So you've had the same conversation then about the German toilets, where your number two ends up on a shelf until you flush it. So why?
Sorry, what's the question?
Why? Why is that shelf there in German, German toilets?
Why is the shelf there? Oh, you want to have the conversation about the shelves? Yeah, sure. So this is a question. In Germany, they have a shelf, and your poop lands on the shelf before it gets flushed down. It's this dry shelf, and people use it to inspect the poop. You can look at your poop, and you can determine certain things about your health and how well your digestion's working. And so, in some cultures, people want to look at it and just check it out. If you have really dark black poop. I'm not an expert on intestinal disease, so just not medical advice. But you know, that can indicate blood, for example, and a serious problem.
But you gave a good guide in the book for the things to look for if you're going to look to know when there might be a problem worth taking a look at. We have an email from Jacob in Springfield who writes, the most expensive toilet in the world was installed on the International Space Station. It turns urine into drinking water. Mm-hmm. He quips, drinking the urine of a burly Russian, one more reason to not want to be an astronaut. The poop is vacuum packed and returned on reentry. I don't know, did you get to the space station toilet in the book?
I talked briefly about, I'm not sure it was the space station trailer or it was more the space shuttle toilet, because there's a funny story about how the astronauts had to really aim their poop. They also separated their urine and their poop, as the reader noted, or the listener noted, and they had to poop through a very narrow hole. And they had to, there was like a camera, so they had a training toilet with a camera so that they could kind of aim their poop properly and then memorize the right position to be in so that when they were on the space shuttle, they could get it just right.
Well, I could see that, you know, this is the cost of going into space, but you know, it occurs to me that this is probably part of the issue with experimenting with new toilet designs, is not just that you have to be able to talk to people about it, which people can be somewhat reluctant to do, but you also have to get people to try them. And there's an example in the book of the Tiger toilet, which is really interesting, and I'm curious to know how the creator of that got people to go along with testing it.
A Tiger toilet that uses worms?
Yes.
Ah, so I mentioned briefly the Tiger toilet. Tiger worms are a kind of worm. It's like the larva that I was talking about.
Oh, the black soldier fly? Yeah.
Yeah, right. They will help break down the waste in a toilet, the poop. They eat it, and it keeps it, and it creates a sort of vermicompost. So your listeners who are familiar with composting will know that sometimes worms are a good way to compost. A researcher that I was talking to, so, you know, she was testing the Tiger toilet, or she was testing these worms. She was trying to develop this technology, basically. And she needed poop to use. And she was in the UK at the time, and in London she couldn't really get access to sort of raw poop, so she had to go out to a research center where they're kind of hippies in Wales, and they gave her their poop so that she could experiment with the worms. But in that case, they just had the poop into a bucket, and she would collect it. One of the funny things is that researchers really need to figure out how to get enough poop to do their research. It's not that easy because people use toilets, right? But then that gets mixed with water and goes away, but they might need raw poop. And you think, okay, well, you just have people poop in a bucket at work. But the fact is that people poop usually once a day, first thing in the morning. They don't poop at work. So in order to get poop for their research, they have to go to some length. So they have to ask people to bring it in Tupperware, and nobody wants to do that. And so this is kind of an issue in research in this area.
We have, it's interesting how many emails you're getting on the subject matter.
People love this subject.
They must.
Yeah.
Lori, No Town Given, writes, how do you keep people from flushing everything down a toilet? Sanitary pads, razor blades, hair, needles, wipes go down toilets. As an operator, I've seen it all when I dragged a pump. Grease is a major problem in collection lines. Wastewater collection keeps everyone healthy. I encourage folks to visit your local wastewater facility. Lori, thank you for that.
I love this. Okay, I love everything she's just said. So I want to start with the end and then go to the beginning. I agree. Everyone should know where their poop goes. It's easy to look up online. Usually you can find out, and they're happy to give you a tour at the facility. This is one of my missions. I think this is the main thing you can do to sort of improve our toilet systems is just find out what's going on in your community and what's happening. As for flushing things, yeah, there's only three things you should be flushing: pee, poo, and toilet paper. Of course, there's other bodily fluids that you can also flush.
People do barf in toilets, yeah.
Barfing, yeah. Those are okay to flush, and toilet paper. But people flush all kinds of things. And this is an example of one of the ways these old systems are not coping well with the modern world, because we have all this stuff and we flush it down in plastics and all these chemicals, and they clog the sewer pipes, and they combine with oils and grease and fat from our modern diets, and they congeal into these clogs. You know, they're sometimes called fatbergs. You've probably heard of them.
We've talked about fatbergs, and the one in the London Museum, yes.
Yeah, there was one in the London. They've even put one on display in the London Museum, just to show people what they're doing to their sewers. It's sewer abuse, as one expert told me. And so we're really abusing our sewers because we don't think about it. We just think, oh, that's waste. This is a trash can. Flush it down. I was like that myself. But yeah, I don't know how to get people to stop. I was looking at the website of the city of Ashland, and they're trying to get people to stop flushing anything but the three P's down the toilet. So all I can say is, you know, listen to your wastewater operators and sewer operators and take care of it, because they are the ones who have to go in, by the way, and clean this stuff out. And it's really unpleasant work, and it also can be dangerous because there can be buildup of gases in there. So it's also like a human issue. There's really people who have to go down there.
Yeah, the wipes. I know I've talked to enough people in sewage treatment who talked about how those get stuck on the propellers for the stuff that moves the sewage around. So that clogs up the system. And then we had a situation in Redding, California, early in the pandemic, where because people couldn't get a hold of toilet paper, they were using T-shirt material.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So these wet wipes are the worst. I mean, the sewer operators hate them. Even if it says flushable, don't flush them. Anything that says flushable, don't believe it. Just flush the toilet paper. Think of them and put it in the trash can.
So
the actual trash can.
The actual trash can. Okay. So I want to get to the Bill Gates example, because I used it in the billboard at the beginning of the hour.
Yeah.
Bill Gates, actually, I had to go look myself. This really happened. Bill Gates gave a speech with a jar of poop next to him.
Yeah, he's been on this mission as well. His work is in low income contexts and low income countries. You know, these very poor places where people don't have good toilets. And he's also noticed, you know, the sewer grid isn't reaching there, and it's you know, often not practical to put it there. It's expensive, and so, you know, he said, well, maybe we need off grid solutions, and so he started funding the Reinvent the Toilet Challenge, which got a lot of attention. And I think it started to make, you know, people think about this issue and also think about toilets as maybe being cool. I think we can do better than just kind of, you know, destigmatizing them. I mean, I really think that we can make toilets cool, and if people might start to think that toilets that are available to everybody, that put us in more harmony with nature, with the planet, with each other, that would be like a really cool thing to have, rather than just kind of an embarrassing thing to have a weird toilet in your home.
But yeah, well, it's interesting because, you know, you're I think what you're looking for is some enthusiasm to express for using the toilet. And I know people have got the ones with the heated seats and the sprays and all that stuff. But as you point out, you need different toilets for different places, because, you know, there are places that don't have electrical grids or sanitation systems. So you need something more in concert with what the conditions are there. So it is not like one toilet will solve all problems.
Yeah, it's really not one size fits all. I mean, I think that's really the main thing. That's what's been holding us back. And we need to not just have a toilet.
Did I lose you? Are you still there, Chelsea? Oh, looks like we're having a little bit of a internet recycle time here. But Chelsea Wald is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is Pipe Dreams, The Urgent Global Quest to Transform the Toilet. Chelsea, can we hear you now?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
There, yeah, you're back.
Okay, good.
Yeah, we had a little bit of a buffering problem there, I think, because of the because we're talking to Chelsea on Skype. So down to our last minute or so here. I mean, did you find any one toilet that rises above the flock or something that looks like it might be the answer in a bunch of places anyway?
I wouldn't say that exactly, but I do think that I do want to emphasize that this urine diversion is something that could really work in a lot of sex and obsession, but I would look for that more in the future in a lot of different places, because I think there's a lot of potential for it, whether there's sewers, there's no sewers, there's a lot of opportunity with collecting our urine.
The Dutch town of Snake we were talking about with the Waterschoon, has anybody replicated that project even within the Netherlands, or is it a one-of-a-kind thing?
Oh, they're working on a more expanded demonstration projects. So yes, they are developing it, and they're using newer technologies even to do more with it. So it's really more of a more than a specific set of technologies. It's a concept. It's a system that's designed with reuse in mind from the start, as opposed to just treatments and safe disposal. And I think that it's really that shift in mindset that makes that project different.
All right, it's very much a work in progress to come up with new toilets. The book is called Pipe Dreams, The Urgent Global Quest to Transform the Toilet. Chelsea Wald, a science journalist living in Den Haag in the Netherlands, has been our guest on The Exchange. Chelsea, thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for the questions.
Okay.